Legoland Podcast with David Amoyal.
Benvenuti, as we would say in Italy. Welcome to all of you that don't speak Italian. Thank you so much for joining us for the first episode of the week of the Calcioland podcast. And this episode is brought to you by our great friends at Euro Fantasy Game, the best place to play fantasy football, and also a site where you can get a lot of great articles from a lot of superb writers like John Solano, Chloe Beresford, and yours truly. So, Alex, it was your birthday weekend. I went to see Radiohead twice. The big storyline still is the reported return of Bonucci to Juve, which could come with Higuain going to Milan and Caldara as well going to Milan. So I have to ask you, you know, there's a lot of questions on the transfers, the numbers, amortized values, all things that I think, you know, can be very interesting to some people. But I think a topic that everyone can relate to is the emotion surrounding Bonucci's potential return to Juve. It was definitely a messy divorce when it happened last year. So I got to ask you, just from a human standpoint, Alex, if Bonucci returns to Juve, and I think there's a better chance than not that it happens, how do you think he'd be received by his teammates and, more importantly, from Juve fans? Because I got to tell you, I've been, like, trying so hard to think of, like, a comparable example. It doesn't have to be in football. It could be in the NBA. And I'm really struggling to find the similar situations. From a human aspect, how do you think it goes down with the players and the fans?
Well, it's funny you said that, because honestly, I'm not at all saying Bonucci is LeBron James or that the situation is the same. But I do think of, okay, Bonucci is this Juventus legend, and then he goes to another Serie A giant, which obviously is going to ruffle some feathers of Juventus fans and Juventus players, etc. But just remember, LeBron James was on the Cleveland Cavaliers for the beginning of his career, and he promised the city of Cleveland he would bring them a championship. And when things weren't going well, he left. And he did it, obviously, in questionable fashion, doing an hour special on TV and then saying he's taking his talents to South Beach. Now, Cleveland Cavaliers fans, David, burned his jersey. He was dead to them. But then, all of a sudden, LeBron comes back, and it's like it never, ever happened. They embraced him big time. If they could have unburned those jerseys, they would have. Of course, there's always a small percentage that are going to be stubborn. And in this case with Bonucci, there are going to be a small percent where, like, nope, you wronged us. You went to AC Milan. Things did not end well. Nope, you're dead to us. But overall, he was gone for 1 year. Yes, things got messy, but clearly he's buried the hatchet a little bit with Allegri. And I think his teammates, you speak of the teammates, I think that will totally be fine. I think his teammates are definitely still friends with him. I think he'll definitely be welcomed by the teammates. But once the fans see him back in the black and white, I don't think there's going to be much of a problem. I really don't. Obviously, Bonucci on the side has definitely dealt with some tough personal stuff with his son. And honestly, if you loved Bonucci before as a Juventus fan, I think you're going to love him again. It definitely, I mean, this is some intense, intense stuff, obviously. This is way past the sport when it comes to someone like Bonucci going from Juve to Milan. But I really do think, David, overall, it's going to be a smoother transition than maybe some would think. So that's my take on it. So I want to ask your take, but I also want to ask, what's also the latest on the Bonucci, Higuain, and Caldara triangle?
So, by the way, what a great analysis, Alex. That LeBron one is good. I mean, there are some slight differences, but I definitely could see the parallels. So well played there. Before I give you my take on all that, we're recording this. It's in a 1:30 or so Boston time on Monday. So in Italy, it's 7:30 in the evening. So this is the latest. And I think it's important, like on Friday, there was a tweet from a Sky Sports in Italy saying that the deal was agreed in principle, Caldara for Bonucci and Higuain on loan to Milan. Even I started tweeting on that, but then Di Marzio's report was a little bit more cautious. Since then, it's definitely been backtracked a little bit. So this is where it stands now. Higuain's back in Italy. His vacation's over after the World Cup. His brother met with Juve today for 2 hours. Juve let him know that he's on the market. And they're trying to find him a team. Milan are definitely interested. They'd like to get him on loan with an option to buy. And that's really more for financial reasons, how it would show up on their financial statement. So they have to convince Higuain that they're totally committed to him. I think more than the formula of the deal, Higuain wants to make sure Milan has an ambitious project, that he's not taking a massive step down from Juve. I'm sure Higuain also wants to make sure he gets paid. He's one of the highest paid players in Serie A at Juve. I'm sure he'd want a long-term deal at least matching his current salary now, and maybe he'd even want Juve to pay him a going-away payment. It's really, really important to note that Higuain's enormous salary, Juve have to get it off their books this year after they spent so much, even before Ronaldo coming. So that's the latest on the Higuain part. It's interesting to note that Chelsea are also in the mix for Caldara, who's also been linked to Borussia Dortmund. So let's see how that evolves. I think the key thing is that it's very difficult for Bonucci to go back to Milan after even Leonardo said publicly and Marotta said publicly that he wants to go to Juve. So let's see what happens there. As far as, you know, my take on how Bonucci would be received at Juve, let's start with the players. I mean, I think that's a no problem at all. I know there's been a lot of the stories on what happened in Cardiff in the final match. But look, even though he was sold, Bonucci is very close to Barzagli, is very close to Chiellini. They went on vacation together in Montreal at the end of the season to watch a Formula One event. Chiellini, who is Juve's current captain, is basically one of the main people lobbying to bring back Chiellini to Juve. I think with the players, there would be zero problems. Even with Allegri, there's been a detente. I think Gazzetta dello Sport did a really nice job detailing the timelines of this. And this all started last October when Bonucci was listed in FIFA's top 11 ideal team, an event that Allegri attended as well. Bonucci gave Allegri a lot of credit for how he helped him reach that point that he would be in FIFA's top 11 to begin with. So I think, you know, with Allegri and the players, that's a no-brainer. With the fans, it's going to be a little bit harder. I think, you know, it's a combination of things. You know, Bonucci, who was so beloved by Juve fans, someone who really looked like a future Juve legend. When he missed matches, he would go in the stands, sit with the ultras. Like, I don't think it would probably ever get back to that point. But I'm with you. I think, you know, eventually things will get better. I think a series of good matches, Bonucci will be all set. Now, I do think it's important. I'm sure Bonucci, if the deal happens, once it does, will, you know, admit he made a mistake going to Milan and saying all the right things. You know, in a way, it's kind of like someone breaking up with their girlfriend, who's a great girl, going out in the market out there and then realizing that the grass isn't always greener and coming back to the girl with the tail between your legs and saying, hey, I didn't realize what I had all along and all is forgiven. And maybe that's how it's going to play out with Bonucci. You know, my thoughts with the Juve fans' reaction to the move so far is, you know, thank God fans are so emotional with their teams. You know, thank God there's so much passion that fans have with their teams, the players on the teams. Without those, you and me, Alex, wouldn't be doing this podcast as often as we do. I wouldn't get paid to write articles. I wouldn't be able to do a lot of cool things. So thank God for that fan passion. But it's also important that, you know, emotion and anger, you know, sometimes aren't the most, the best emotions when it comes to evaluating things. I think Bonucci, there's been a lot of talk of how poor he was at Milan. I actually think in the second half of the season, once Gattuso arrived, he was quite good. Almost vintage Bonucci. I think in a big CL match next season, there's no doubt I'd rather have Bonucci than Caldara. And I think with Caldara, there's a lot of this sense of looking to the future. Rightfully, a lot of Juve fans are looking at the age of Juve center backs. And are like, oh, look at this Caldara guy. He can be our man down the road that can replace all these guys. Like, that's really important. But look, that's what a lot of people thought about Rugani. And look, there's some debate that Rugani got a fair shake at Juve. I think he did last season. The team vastly improved after. So there's really no way of knowing that Caldara is this player that's going to be down the road. So maybe for Juve, when you bring in Ronaldo and you're going all in to win, the focus really is now. And if you have to sacrifice Caldara for Bonucci, I get it. That's not ideal. But also, don't underestimate the fact that on a young player like Caldara, Juve can make a really big profit. We've talked a lot about amortized value and transfer fees. He'd represent a massive profit. Him potentially leaving could make it much easier for Juve to keep someone like Alessandro, who probably helps him more in the short term. So try not to be so emotional with this deal. But again, I get it. And I love that the fans' passion is what allows me to do all these cool things. So now let's get, speaking of fan passion, our listeners are amazing writers for our podcast because all of their questions make our podcast that much better. As always, you can send us questions using the CalcioLand hashtag. And which ones are we going to go over today, Alex?
All right, David, well, let's start on that topic. What are some of the underrated aspects of the Bonucci-Caldara-Higuain triangle?
Yeah, so I was thinking a lot about this because I think a lot of fans are just looking at it as Bonucci for Caldara. But again, I think there's a much broader context that's important here. So obviously the financial side, I'm not going to keep going at it. But Juve had spent a lot even before Ronaldo. And I know they've made some money selling some young players. But this is a club that's been operating on a balanced budget for a lot of years. Sooner or later, I had a feeling this summer there was going to be a departure that Juve fans wouldn't have particularly liked. So that's one really important factor, how much Juve spent. Another huge factor is how important it is for Juve to get Higuain's salary off their books. This is why they'd even consider a loan with an option to buy, because that gets his salary off the book. You combine the loan and the option to buy for around 55 million euro, that would be pretty much his amortized value on Juve's books, so they wouldn't take a loss. But Juve cannot afford to have Higuain on their squad next season. He would represent a cost of 35 million between salary and amortized value. So this actually, Higuain's got a lot of leverage over Juve on this. Another really underrated factor is Caldara, who likely really wants an opportunity to play. His agent, Rizzo, has been very involved in all these talks with Juve and Milan. They've said multiple times they're open to a move to Milan. If he goes there, he's definitely going to be a starter. Romagnoli really had a breakout season. Caldara can say, hey, maybe this is my career path as opposed to what happened to Rugani at Juve. So that's another factor. Let's not underestimate Caldara's will in all this. And then I mentioned agent Rizzo for Caldara. He's done a lot of deals with Milan. Granted, that was the previous regime, but he definitely has an affinity for Milan. And the other factor here is Bonucci's agent, Lucci, who has a lot of influence at both clubs. Like, Lucci also represents Suso at Milan. At Juve, he has Marchisio and Cuadrado. He was instrumental in getting Bonucci to Milan last summer. So he's definitely one to watch. You know, Lucci has a lot of leverage with both clubs based on the other clients that he has. And this, to me, the most underrated factor in all this not being discussed at all, Juve fans who are so upset about the potential of Caldara leaving, let me ask you this question very simply. Do you have faith that Paratici, their sporting director, who's been outstanding at discovering talents, do you not think Paratici has the ability to discover the next Caldara in a year or two? 2 years ago, hardly anyone knew who Caldara was. Juve signed him. They let him develop the right way at Atalanta. I have no doubt Paratici can do this again. So if sacrificing Caldara means making up for some of the expenses from all the summer, granting his wish to go to play more often, helps Juve get rid of Higuain's salary, because the way I see it, Caldara is like one of those trades that you see in the NBA when a team is giving up a young prospect just to get out off of a big contract that they don't want on their cap. In a lot of ways, this is really similar. Caldara is almost like the pill that makes the bad medicine go down. So there's really a lot of factors here. I wouldn't look at it just as Bonucci for Caldara. Try to look at it in a broader picture.
All right, David, next Twitter question. Could Milinkovic-Savic stay at Lazio? And if he does, would that be a repeat of the Andrea Belotti fiasco?
So, anyone who's listened to the podcast a long time knows that there's few things that make me more passionate than getting on my soapbox for Belotti, how that exit clause was put precisely to keep him, not to let him leave. But in any event, look, Torino could have gotten a good amount for Belotti last summer, close to the 100 million they were looking for. And because he had a bad season, maybe they'll never get that money again. Could this happen again with Milinkovic-Savic? I can't exclude it altogether. Now, I have much more faith in Milinkovic-Savic over Belotti long term. I just think he's just too good. I think way too much has been made about his World Cup performances. A, he was good in the first match for Serbia, wasn't good the other two matches, but he had barely played with that national team. It's not like Pogba, who had spent a lot of time with his teammates on France. Like, Milinkovic-Savic basically showed up with these teammates. But maybe that has slowed the momentum on him potentially leaving. Lazio would love an offer of over 100 million. I think at that point they would let him leave. They also haven't spent so much this summer that they can't afford to keep him. They've gotten a very good return on Felipe Anderson, and that's actually a really good comp for Milinkovic-Savic. 2 years ago, Lazio could have gotten more for Felipe Anderson, around 50 million. They ended up getting around 38 for him now. You know, fairly big difference, but they also got to keep him for two extra seasons. His amortized value went down. They got performances out of him. So I don't see it at all as a disaster for Lazio if Milinkovic-Savic stays. I think it's more likely than not he leaves. But if he does, you know, Lazio's in a very good position to have him back, and I think he'd have another great season. So as a Serie A fan, I wouldn't be that upset if that happens.
I promise I'll stay away from this Milinkovic-Savic thing in terms of people judging him off the World Cup. I just want to say two things. If you're going to use the logic that Milinkovic-Savic is overrated because of two, as you said, only two bad games at the World Cup, well then fine. Chelsea fans should not have wanted Diego Costa after 2014, and no one should want Robert Lewandowski after this World Cup. So your theory, folks, is ass. And by the way, if you want to flip it around and say, well, if you perform well at the World Cup, then everyone should want you, well then guess what, David? Everyone should want Ivan Perisic because he balled out at the World Cup. So I hate that World Cup logic. It's utter garbage. So let's move on. Next Twitter question.
Awesome.
What are the odds Roma signs Steven Nzonzi?
Now, this would be quite a nice move for them. So, you know, maybe not getting Malcolm ends up being a blessing in disguise for them. It looks like they'll try to reinvest more towards the midfield. And Nzonzi, who Monchi has had a long relationship with, and they were together in Spain, would make a lot of sense. I think he's perfect to be the heir apparent to De Rossi. De Rossi is essentially the only real natural defensive mid on Roma's team, and Nzonzi would really fill that void. It would really help, though, Roma's chances of signing Nzonzi if they can move Gonalons, who has offers from Crystal Palace and Everton. It's a matter of salary, number of players on the team. I think if they can move Gonalons, Roma could get Nzonzi and then try to get an offensive winger, maybe someone not as expensive as Bailey or even Berardi, but just someone else to compete up front, and instead they really bolster their midfield, and Nzonzi would really check a lot of boxes for them. That would be quite an intriguing move if they pull it off.
He had a tremendous season, I think, 2 years ago at Sevilla. A really solid player. So, David, next Twitter question. Any rumors of Federico Chiesa leaving Fiorentina?
So last summer, Fiorentina clean house. They sold almost all their expensive players. The only ones really left were Badelj and Chiesa. They gave a big contract to last summer. Now, Badelj is joining Lazio. He arrived in Rome today. The move's about to be official. I think Fiorentina would have to be really overwhelmed with an offer to move Chiesa. The reason for that is their ownership group's already been heavily criticized in the city of Florence. They really haven't invested much in the team in recent years. They just don't seem that into it in the team. And I think, too, for Chiesa, I think he totally gets that one more season at Fiorentina would be the best thing for him. He's got a nice partnership with Simeone up front. He's tailor-made for Pioli's system. At this point, I'd be really surprised if Chiesa goes.
Next question. If Ghulam wasn't injured again, would he be a good left back option for Manchester United?
Absolutely, man. I'm a huge fan of Ghulam. I liked him a lot at the beginning of last season. I thought he really improved, was better defensively, was really a devastating player for Napoli, man. On that left wing with him and Insigne, that was really Napoli's strength, was really on that side of the pitch. It's too bad he's had two knee injuries. Prior to the second one, he signed that extension with Napoli with an exit clause. I think it's about 40-45 million euro. If he was healthy, that would be a bargain. And the reason I say that is just so few quality left backs out there, and Ghulam to me really elevated his performance. I had him prior to last season more in the Marcos Alonso range, and I think he's better than that. So he'd be a really good player. I actually, you know, if he was purely was completely healthy and you told me who would I rather have next season between him and Alexandro, I would actually have to really think about it. That really goes to show how good his season was and kind of how underwhelming Alexandro was. So definitely a player to watch, but there are concerns about his health. Napoli, it doesn't sound like he'll be able to start the season, and that would be really a tough blow. But if he proves to be healthy next summer, there's going to be a huge market for him.
All right, how about this, David? Considering the fact Gasperini has improved so many players at Atalanta, will he ever get another chance at a top club?
You know, in a way, he's almost too perfect for that club. You know, it really reminds me, like, Atalanta's basically Udinese 2.0 from recent years. So provincial team, very well run, who discovers talents, sells them for big profits. Like, Atalanta, more than Udinese, they develop a lot of their own, but they also have great scouts and buy a lot of young players. And Guidolin at Udinese was very good at developing these young players, also played fairly attractive football, like a lot of parallels to Gasperini. It's almost like Gasperini is a victim of his own success. He's just so perfect at Atalanta. And look, Atalanta's becoming more ambitious. They've made so much money in recent years selling players. They're actually starting to spend a little bit more. They brought in Zapata. They brought in Pasalic on loan with option to buy. He might actually end up being a perfect manager for them long term. But I will say that if, say, next summer Di Francesco has another great season and gets interest from the Premier League, or something terrible happens with Ancelotti at Napoli, it wouldn't shock me if Gasperini has a really good season, that we see him on the radar for Roma and Napoli. You know, Milan would have to be really into a youth project and really tell their fans, look, you know, we are going with the young and Italian team that Berlusconi promised you for 5 years. We're going to do it with Gasperini. Like, I don't see it there. I don't see it at Juve, but Roma or Napoli, I wouldn't exclude. And he'd actually be quite intriguing at Lazio if Simone Inzaghi goes to the next level.
All right, next Twitter question, David. Why do Serie A clubs use the loan with option to buy so frequently?
Yeah, so I get asked this a lot, you know, why do Serie A teams do these loans with option to buy or even forced option to buy? Why don't they just spend the money right up front and get it over and done with? Well, you know, A, there's a lot of advantages to spreading out deals over multiple financial fiscal years with the loan to option to buy. You can get pretty creative with how you put it on your books, and the club that gives you the player on loan, you can get a, you know, you can go a few different routes there. It's really also a matter of cash flow when you have to pay the money due, spread. You know, if you do a loan with option to buy, you're paying for the loan. Sometimes you're getting a free loan where you're paying the player salary for the first year. Then the following year, you buy him, and then you can pay it over 2 or 3 year installments. You basically bought yourself another year. So it's really an issue more of timing and financial statements.
All right, how about this? Which Serie A club is the best run club outside of the top five from last season?
It's a really good question. And strategically, this person said top five because I would have said Lazio without a doubt. I think they're just incredibly well run. So since I can't use them, I picked a few teams. But I think you have to really ask yourself, you know, what is the team's goal? Because I think you always should rate how a club operates based on their goals. Like Juve's goal is to win titles. It's very different than, say, a club like Sampdoria. So let's look at what the motivation is for the team. So these are the contenders. I'd say Atalanta does a great job because they want to be profitable. They want to make a lot of money, which they do every year. They also want to develop their own players, and they want to be competitive. I think now Atalanta are no longer a club that would ever be in the race to avoid relegation, at least for the foreseeable future. And it wasn't that long ago that they were in that tier. Now they're a team consistently competing for a Europa League spot. So they deserve a lot of credit. Sampdoria, I think, do a wonderful job at discovering talents abroad and making huge profits. Look at Torreira. Torreira was already playing in Italy, but discovering players like that, they found Patrick Schick, turned him into a massive profit. Sampdoria also really good at developing relationships with other Serie A clubs. They do a lot of deals with Roma, Napoli, and Inter. There's a lot of advantages to doing multiple deals with teams. You know, like I always say, don't look at transfers so much in a vacuum. If you see a team doing a lot of deals with a club, kind of look at all the deals together and then evaluate it that way. So I think Sampdoria is great at scouting and developing relationship. Chievo, you got to give them a ton of credit for continuously staying in Serie A. Their goal is exactly that, just stay in Serie A. They really don't care if they develop young players. They usually have a veteran, old team. They're not fun to watch, but they're just effective. And if you knew like how tiny Chievo is, it's just really a neighborhood in Verona. I find that really impressive. I think too much is made of how boring they are to watch, but they're really, really effective. And then finally, Genoa, their goal flat out is to make money. They do a great job of doing so. I think their president, Preziosi, is basically known. You show up with like a suitcase of money, he'll sell you anything. And Genoa still makes it, though. They're in Serie A. They have some intriguing players. They just do a lot of deals. It's sometimes with volume of all these deals, they hit a home run. They're making profits in a lot of ways. So those are my nominees. If our listeners have any more, please send them in using the CalcioLand hashtag.
All right, David, last Twitter question. Let's move away from football. You talked about it at the top. What was it like to see Radiohead back-to-back nights in Boston?
All right, so you guys are going to have to indulge me a few minutes after this. We have a great interview with Paolo Mangone to go over the mid-table teams and the race to avoid relegation. This is going to be a few minutes. If you're not interested, skip it. You don't want to miss the interview with Paolo. So I have to say, I'm going to sound really douchey and jaded. I've been a huge Radiohead fan for a long time. I've seen them many times. I've traveled multiple times to see them in person. And, you know, they're playing back-to-back nights in Boston downtown, very close to my house. Maybe I'm just jaded. For a while, I really wasn't that excited to go see them. This summer, I've been blessed to see a lot of shows. But boy, am I glad that I went. I wasn't that pumped going in, but I've seen Radiohead many times. This was probably as good two nights as I've seen them. I have to say the experience of seeing them back-to-back nights in the same city was really pretty awesome. It was basically one long concert divided over two nights. I think they only played four or five songs both nights. They basically played an entire different set list. We got really spoiled, a lot of songs they haven't played in a while. So it was a great experience. I have to say I've had my issues with Thom Yorke in the past year or so. I won't get into like politics or to why that is the case, but suffice to say I wasn't that into him as I have been in the past. But after these two nights, I'm completely back in. He was absolutely amazing, totally locked in. It kind of made me think a little bit of that movie Fury Road, like George Miller, that director. He took that opportunity with that movie to basically piss on all other directors and say, look at what I can do with these action sequences. You don't see anyone else pulling off that stuff. And that was basically my impression of Thom Yorke. He's basically pissing on everyone else with those performances. So that was awesome. There's only two more shows on this Radiohead tour when they hit back on the road. Whenever that will be, I cannot recommend enough going to see them. So I want to take this opportunity to thank all our listeners. Your support is so important. We rely on you to be our marketing department. We love that you guys plug our podcast on Twitter, tell your followers about us. Please leave us reviews. If you're listening to us on your iPhones, please give us a 5-star review on iTunes. It takes 2 seconds. You want to leave us a comment, we read them all and we appreciate it. So thank you so much. Please keep sending us questions with the CalcioLand hashtag. Also be on the lookout. We're going to have a fantasy football league for Serie A with our friends at Euro Fantasy League. And without further ado, here's my great friend Paolo Mangone. For the interview segment of today's podcast, I'm thrilled to be joined by Paolo Mangone, my colleague on Di Marzio's English page. We know him as the specialist on our site for the Provinciali, the mid-table teams. Every time there's an update on a mid-table, even a lower table team, Paolo is rushing to do it because he has a passion for it. So I really can't think of a better person to kind of take stock on the mid-table teams and also a little bit the battle to avoid relegation. I feel like we cover a lot the top teams on CalcioLand, but we want to show some love to the other teams in the league. So before we get to all that, I want to welcome you back on the show, Paolo. It's great to have you back on CalcioLand.
Thanks, David. It's always a pleasure to be back.
Okay, so to prep for this podcast, I sent you a ranking, and this is my ranking. Maybe you didn't know that this is the order that I have them in, of the teams that didn't finish in the Champions League last season. So I figured this was a good place to get started. So this is how I ranked them, and then let me know with the way you put them in order. So I have Lazio. With or without Milinkovic-Savic, I'll be that bold. I really like a lot of the moves they made on the transfer market. So I'll say regardless of him being on the team or not, I think if he leaves, they'll definitely spend some more money. So it won't be a total wash if he goes. Then I have Milan. Then I have Atalanta, Fiorentina. And then I have a feeling this is going to be fairly controversial. I have Genoa, who I really loved what they've done in the transfer market so far. Then I have the crosstown rival, Sampdoria, and then I have Torino. So those are kind of the higher mid-table teams. We could talk about Udinese, Bologna, Cagliari, but I see those teams as a little bit closer to the race to avoid relegation. So that's my ranking, Paolo. How do you see those teams?
So I agree with you that Lazio is the best team in that list. Because they brought in Acerbi, who's a experienced defender, to replace De Vrij, who left for Inter. Let's assume that they do close the deal for Carrera and Bajdeli. That's some two great signings, one to replace Felipe Anderson, who went to West Ham, and Bajdeli, who will provide some more depth in the midfield, because Lazio still have to play three competitions. Where I differ with you, David, is I think Atalanta is a second place in the power rankings, even though they lost Cristante and Petagna. But they did sign great players to replace players that left. Zapata was signed to replace Petagna, and Pasalic was signed to replace Cristante. And they're very similar players, Cristante and Pasalic, both long-range shooters, both excellent passers. I have Milan third because of their owner situation. They can't really sign any major players yet. They have to still figure that out. And the players that they did bring in were all free transfers, still great players in their own right, and they will definitely provide depth to the squad. In fourth place, I have Sampdoria. They lost Lucas Torreira, but they're looking to bring in Obiang to replace him, who also played for Samp. And they approved with Defrel and Defrel over Zapata, because Defrel is a much more versatile player. And they reduced the age of their defense by signing Colley and instead of having Silvestre to start. I got Torino fifth, because they haven't really done any moves. The only moves that I of note that I noticed is Itzo to bolster their defense. And then I have Genoa last, because I still think they're closer to the relegation zone than to Europe, even though they sign great experienced players like Sandro, Crescito, and Marchetti to definitely bolster their starting 11.
Very interesting. I think we agree on quite a few things. I know you're very big on Atalanta. I really like their front line. I almost think they're almost too deep. I mean, they have Ilicic, they have Barrow, who was very good second half of last season. They have Papu Gomez, who they're going to do everything they can to hold on to. But I have a little bit more concerns on their defense. To me, they did lose two substantial players in Caldara and Spinazzola. Do you think they have enough in the back to make up for that, though?
I think so, because Gasperini has a knack of producing young center backs. They sign Benir from, I don't know if I'm pronouncing his name right, but from Cittadella, and he's a young 20-year-old center back, and I think he's going to see some reps in at least Serie A this season.
Interesting. Yeah, I like what you mentioned about Lazio for sure. I really like their moves. I mean, Correa and Badelj, I think we can give them to them. I actually think they have a pretty good chance of competing maybe for a top four. I think they did a good job with Acerbi, as you mentioned, replacing De Vrij. Anything that stands out to you on Fiorentina? I feel like this summer, you know, they're trying. Last summer, they sold a ton of players. They tried to stamp out. Bedell's a pretty big loss. But so far, they've been able to hold on to Chiesa and Simeone. Anything that stands out to you on Fiorentina?
The signing of Lafont, if I'm pronouncing his name correctly, the young French goalkeeper, 19-year-old. He definitely will be seeing some reps because they got rid of Sportiello. And the goalkeeper position has always been a question mark for the past 2 years. And if the reporting is correct and they do get Piaka with a loan option to buy, that would definitely improve their front three. Imagine a front three of Piaka, Simeone, and Chiesa.
Yeah, that would certainly be an intriguing front line. So now let's talk in general about the Provinciali. And I'm going to give it a really broad definition here for the purpose of the podcast. So basically, you can mention moves to any of the teams that we already mentioned, lower table teams. Let's just take out the four teams that are in the Champions League. What have been some of your favorite transfer moves that we've seen from the other teams in Serie A?
Well, as I mentioned, one of my favorites has been Crescito to Genoa. Obviously, for nostalgic reasons, I grew up watching Crescito breaking through at Genoa. So I was kind of disappointed when he left because I knew that was his end of his international career. He missed a bunch of tournaments in between. So it's nice to see a player who was homegrown returning back to his hometown club. Also, Odero to Samp. I really rated him when he was playing in Serie B with Venezia last season. And now he'll get his chance to start because Samp sold Viviano to Sporting Lisbon. And another transfer for nostalgic reasons is Kevin Prince-Boateng to Sassuolo. Always nice to see him back in Serie A. He will definitely improve the attacking end of that team. And finally, to round it off, it's Mandragora to Udinese because it's a great move for both sides. Udinese get essentially a defensive stalwart in midfield who's able to pass the ball, and Juventus also has a buyback clause on him.
Yeah, definitely that Mandragora deal, very interesting one. It's interesting that you mentioned to Audero, because I think Viviano is a big loss for Sampdoria. I think he definitely was on the higher end of the goalkeepers in Serie A, but I'll take your word for it. I've heard a lot of good things on Audero. Wasn't there too that Falcinelli deal that you liked for Bologna? I remember vaguely that was one from earlier in the summer.
Yeah,
wasn't that one of the ones that you liked?
Yes, I did. Falcinelli, has been producing, will play with Fiorentina, is able to score goals and definitely scored goals versus Sassuolo. So he's moving back to another mid-table teamish. And it's important for Bologna to get him because they lost Verdi to Napoli. So they definitely need to make up some of the goals.
Interesting. Okay, let's start taking a very early look at the race to avoid relegation. I think this year we have some pretty exciting additions to Serie A because Empoli are a club that have shown they can belong in Serie A. Granted, it's not the Sarri's Empoli anymore, but they are a club with tradition. We have Frosinone that returned to Serie A after one season back down in Serie B. And then we have Parma, of course, the noble team back up now with a 5-point deduction. I'm going to throw in that race. I'm going to still put Cagliari. I think Bologna is slightly above them, but they could get sucked in. I'm definitely going to keep Chievo in that mix and Spal as well. I think Sassuolo is going to be okay, and I think Udinese as well. Are there any teams that you're looking at aside from the newly promoted teams that you think are going to be in the mix to the race to avoid relegation?
Chievo's first on the list. I don't think they improved greatly compared to last season. They were lucky to survive last season. Genoa is going to be my outside pick. I still think that they haven't improved just enough to get out of the relegation battle. And Bologna is a kind of a question mark because we don't know how people in Zaghi is going to start off. Is he going to be like how he was in Milan, or is he going to show promise like he did at Venezia last season?
Very, very interesting. What's your assessment on Parma? Now they might get, I know you and I were talking about it offline, how they might get their appeal taken down. Right now they have a 5-point deduction. They have been linked to some pretty sexy names up front. What do you expect from Parma this season? I've been asked a ton about them, but you followed them so much more in Serie B than I, so I think you can give our listeners a much better idea of what we can expect from them.
Well, they signed Luigi Sepet to be their starting goalkeeper. I think he's good enough to have a decent season. They got Cicciaretti back. Who played with Parma last season, so he'll be familiar with the system. They signed Bruno Alves, who has tons of experience, especially at Cagliari. They signed ex-player Massimo Gobbi, and they signed another Serie A player in Luca Rigoni. So they signed a lot of Serie A experience because they know that they need some sort of veteran presence to bring the team around, especially with the 5-point deduction if it holds.
Interesting. Okay, let's close on this, Paolo, because you're a big fan of the Azzurri. The first time I met you, you told me look out for the vintage Paolo Rossi jersey in the station, and it was pretty easy to find you that way. You've been following Italy's under-19 team. They had an impressive performance at a recent tournament. Tell our listeners what stood out to you from the young Italians. Any players we should be keeping an eye out for?
Well, I think Roma got a stud in Zaniolo. I think if Nainggolan doesn't pan out for Inter and Zaniolo breaks in through the into Roma's first team in a couple years, I think a lot of fans will be saying that Roma fooled Inter, put it that way. Also, they have another. Roma has another young strong team, Fratesi, who essentially was the link-up man between the front. Two and the midfield when they played yesterday. Also, Tripardelli, I believe he went on loan to Sassuolo this season and was on the bench for the first game, came into the first game, and then did not leave the field until he had to be subbed out in the final yesterday. And of course, Moise Keane, 2 goals yesterday, the Balotelli celebration as well. Also, look out for Capone. He's owned by Atalanta, and provided a nice back heel assist to Keane on the second goal. And Scamacca, he's also owned by Sassuolo, I believe, and he scored a nice headed goal yesterday.
Fantastic, Paolo. I can't thank you enough. Every time I feel like we have to fill a gap in the podcast, some topics that we haven't covered enough, your name always comes up because you are the master of these topics. So I can't thank you enough for your contribution to the podcast. And also Di Marzio's side, thank you so much for joining us today.
You're quite welcome, David. It's always a pleasure.